This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Welcome, Rutherford County. Beautiful day today. I want to let you know that first part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, and they're located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And you can reach them at 713-4639 or on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And that's Melissa Warren's business, and she felt like that there was a number of people that were not being attended to like they should. And we're talking about some of our older people and people who have had medical problems. And what they do is they go in and take care of the normal tasks that you would have to do in your home and no longer can take care of that. And they, what she does is she basically upgrades the quality of life for each individual that's in that home and make sure that they can continue to stay there and enjoy life like they should be able to. I have a very special guest on today, and a lady that has been my friend for many, many years, and one I have a great deal of respect for. And actually, she's almost been like a daughter to me. And she worked with me at the sheriff's office, and is an extremely bright young lady. And everybody knows how successful the school resource officer program has been since I believe 1993. I believe I'm right. And she was one of the great innovators in the program with all the new things that she would come up with that could improve the scholastic and the achievement of a lot of our young people. And Terry, it's great to have you here today.
It is a pleasure. You're going to get me all choked up now.
No. I know you miss the kids because we were talking about that earlier.
I do. I really miss those kids. I miss walking in the hallways and seeing those kids, making that connection, making that relationship, and knowing that you're actually making a difference in that child's life, even mm-hmm. if it's just to show them, say hi to them, mm-hmm. you know, and pay attention to them. And 5 minutes out of your day is nothing, but it's a world to them. So I miss that part of it. I miss it a lot.
You and I remember Bubba Howell.
Yes, we do.
And, of course, Bubba was a character in his own right. But as you remember, he was one of those people that felt like that being a school resource officer was not really being a law enforcement officer, as you remember.
Yes.
And he asked me, "What in the world are you doing?" And it wasn't long that he started seeing the value of it. And he wanted to be a school resource officer, and he was assigned to Rockvale.
Yes.
And he would come in and talk to me at great length about being a school resource officer and telling me, he said, "You know, it's like being a rock star." And that's exactly what his words.
That's a perfect analogy. Mm-hmm. It is.
Because they draw to you, and you become their whole world while mm-hmm. you're there at school. And you have such an appeal to the kids. I mean, you really did. They just absolutely loved you.
Being a school resource officer, it was a blessing to me. And I remember, speaking of Bubba, I remember when I started on the road. And, of course, I knew Bill Kennedy before I came to the sheriff's department. Right. And I knew what he did, and I thought, wow, that's something that I'd love to do. And, I, you know, fortunately, you hired me, and in our rotation, I had to spend a day with that school resource officer, and it was Bubba. Mm-hmm. So I got out there, and I knew all I wanted to do, that was my goal, was to be an SRO. Mm-hmm. So I knew when I got out there, I was like, I gotta make him think that I'd be, you know, somebody that would help the division. Mm-hmm. So I got out there, and Bubba went mile a minute. I don't even know if we ate lunch that day. And quite frankly, I don't know if I went to the bathroom that day. I mean, we were just so busy.
Uh-oh,
and
he don't go
was
that far.
Well, you know what I mean. We were just going constantly. Bubba mm-hmm. never stopped. And those kids, they there was always one in his classroom, mm-hmm. his little storage room as an office. But he was teaching. He had, I think he had, I don't know if it was another sheriff's deputy that came out. I can't remember what it was, but he had the patrol car out there and another deputy out there. So he was always providing them with something fun.
And with all the happiness that went on with Bubba and all the fun things and the many contributions he made to the school, there's one moment that really grabs me more than any. And that is, as you know, Bubba passed away very early in life.
Yes.
And, I mean, he was a strong man, just mm-hmm. a hulking man.
Yeah, he was.
But he had a heart disease, and I never will forget at the funeral, the place was lined with kids. Never saw so many kids in my life.
Unbelievable. And it just, and you mentioned it, I get chills. Mm-hmm. But when we walked in, so many of those faces that we all of us SROs knew, mm-hmm. SROs knew, and... But it was jam-packed with kids, and not mm-hmm. just from Rockville, but just all these kids throughout that he had touched their lives in so many ways. And it was that was a sad day for a lot of people that day. Lost mm-hmm. a great, great man.
Yeah, and the emotions were flowing. Oh. And you usually don't see that in kids that age. And it just shows you how intense their feelings were for him. Being in the school resource officer program, I know that it touched you in a lot of ways. Was there any time that you were there that you really felt like that it may have been touching you too deeply as far as dealing with the kids? Because I know kids have problems at that age, and they share them with you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we underestimate the whole bullying thing, I think. Mm-hmm. But I know my oldest daughter, who's going to be getting married soon, she had a horrible time with bullying. Mm-hmm. She was picked on a lot, and so when those kids came to me and said, you know, you that mom in me comes out, and boy, mm-hmm. you want to take care of it your own way, mm-hmm. you know. So that though, a lot of those kids, and then of course in the boot camp that we had, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily that my own kids had been through what they went through, but just they just got dealt a bad card in life sometimes and just need to get back on track. So, you know, that of course was my passion. And
you started the program. You were very instrumental in getting it going. You saw a specific need for it. Now, years earlier, we had gone into a number of places to try to get a 24-hour day boot camp going. And of course, the money wasn't there. But you found a way that you could actually start working with these special kids that needed help, and it became extremely successful because you brought in not only the kid but the parents also.
Oh, it was a key. No, we went down to, you let us go down to Sarasota, Florida, mm-hmm. and that's where this specific boot camp was being run, and we went through it with them for that weekend and came back, and I just felt on the drive back I thought there's something missing. And when we got down to writing it and how we were going to write it up to propose it, the key part that was missing was those parents. Mm-hmm. You can't take something that's broken, fix it, and put it back in somewhere where it's going to get trampled again. Mm-hmm. So you had to bring, I mean, the key element, you had to bring the parents in. You know what? The kids, when kids are born, they don't come out with directions. And we as parents always, we're going to make mistakes and we'll continue to make mistakes. But, you know, sometimes you need a little extra help. But you got to bring those parents in and work with them as a whole unit, mm-hmm. not individually.
And a lot of times the parents themselves were looking for another way to deal with their
children. Oh, absolutely.
And this became really the place to go. And I remember a couple occasions where maybe the parents really did not feel committed to it, and the child had to leave at that time because yes. it's not going to work.
Yes, we had to, and those were few. I think we had two or three max, and that was sad because the kids want rules and want guidelines. They truly do, mm-hmm. but if you have the parent that they don't quite know how to give those guidelines in a healthy way, mm-hmm. so when that parent wasn't compliant, you know, the kid had to suffer. But it was a deal breaker. Parents had to be a part of it. So that was kind of sad. But we had, there were a few of those.
How was it working with Bill Kennedy?
Oh, No, I'm just saying. You know what? He's a great leader.
He is.
And, you know, there were times where Bill would hurt my little feelings, mm-hmm. you know. But he wasn't there to not, you know, protect my feelings. He was there to get a job done. And he did it. And the SRO program was so successful those years because of, you know, Bill Kennedy and his passion. Mm-hmm. And that truly was his passion. I mean, you could tell. And those kids and, you know, the wrestling program and the hours that he would, you know, put on. And he always said to us, you know, you're limited by your own imagination. Mm-hmm. Go dream big, come back, present it to me. And he'd let us do anything we wanted to. You just had, and it took time and it took effort. But, I remember when I was on the road, I would just bug him every time I saw him in the hallway. You got a spot? You got a spot? You got a spot? And I remember Daniel McKee was open. I said, I'll go to Daniel McKee. Just give me. I just want a shot, you know. So I guess I bugged him enough.
The reason I said that is because you were so driven to find different ways, different outlets where you can actually use to help upgrade the kids, the problems they were having. You know, when we first started, a lot of people thought in 93 that this program wouldn't be successful at all. And of course, it took off because we had the type of people on board that could actually go in and do the job. And the kids, as we know, kids do not mind discipline if it's given with love.
Exactly.
I mean, it really puts some structure in their lives, and that's one of the things that a lot of them are missing in some of the schools.
Yeah.
And you, when you came in, some of the programs that you started working on were absolutely outstanding. And the Rutherford County does not really realize, a lot of the parents, how important people like you were in their kids' lives. I mean, it's just like,
well,
we all can remember our teachers from the time we started
right.
school. People remember you and a lot of the other SROs, and they will remember you for your whole life just because of the impact that you made in each one of the schools.
Well, and that's, and you know, and it's true for all SROs, because there's you know, adults that say, you know, I remember Officer Kennedy, you know, mm-hmm. when he was at Oakland and he made that impact and he started, you know, great programs there. So, mm-hmm. you know, as supervisors, we were, you know, more fortunate in the fact that we got to see the other side of Bill Kennedy. You mm-hmm. know, you see the work side all the time, and he mm-hmm. has to do a job that, you know, he's tasked with being the commander of that division. And so he is a kind person and really does care. And clearly you can see that with all the kids that still talk about him to this day. So, good person.
And you had to deal with all kinds of people. I mean, you dealt with the county commission, you dealt with the school board, you dealt with everybody along the line, in the chain order, you might say, of getting things done in government. Are there any aspects of being a school resource officer, or having been a school resource officer, that would be more negative than positive, and then vice versa? I mean, what are the things that you really miss the most about? And I know it has to be the kids, but other things.
I tell you, that unit, that SRO unit as a whole, we were a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that was just a mirrored image of what we were at the Sheriff's Department, mm-hmm. you know, back then.
Right.
We were a family back
right.
then, and you watched out for each other, and you took care of each other. And mm-hmm. But we were close as a SRO unit goes. And, you know, and sometimes though you'd hear those patrol call us lollipop cops and mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff, and so it's, you know, but that's, you know, it's all in good fun, but we were tight.
And you never, you really never lose that. I mean, of course, we had lunch today before we came up here, and we had Suzanne Kaufman with us, and she is such a sweet lady,
and
you guys have been best friends.
Ooh, I got a little teared up right there at the end when I was saying goodbye to her. It's hard because we just been, you know, Suzanne's important in my life and has been there through some dark times, as you have been for me as well. So I got a little teary-eyed there.
Nothing like family. All right, we have a phone call. Caller, welcome aboard with Terry Bateman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Jones and your guest. How are you today?
Good. How you doing, Butch?
I'm doing good. Truman, I'm not real sure of the young lady's name you're talking to, but I do want to say this. With my experience and time out at Walter Hill, the school resource officer program there was tremendous, starting off with Eddie Farmer, and then we had Rick with us, and then Jason was with us, and one or two others maybe in between. But Eddie Farmer got us started off well, and you and everybody that was associated with that program are to be commended tremendously for the work that you have done, not only with young people, but also with parents through the School Resource Officer Program.
And you know, Butch, we were very fortunate to have the quality of people like Terry here. We couldn't have found anybody better. But it would not have worked if it hadn't been for the principals and the teachers accepting it. Because as you remember, back when we initially got started, there were a number of people that felt uncomfortable with a law enforcement officer walking down the hallways in a school with being armed. And when you accepted the role, as you knew, it was a partnership. And that's the way it should always continue to be.
Well, it was a partnership, and I guess one reason that I was so much in favor of it was back, and I can remember when I was growing up in elementary school, and Cecil Lamb and the Carlsons and all Mr. Jacobs and all the other Murfreesboro police officers that I knew and I looked up to as not being somebody I was afraid of,
right,
but it was somebody I was a friend to, and I think that's what the School Resource Officer Program brought to the kids at Walter Hill School.
And I think you're right. I mean, they were great role models. And you know, a lot of times kids are going to look up to somebody that's maybe has a different aura about them. We're talking about firemen, police officers, people like that. When they see them, they're going to look at them differently. And it's almost like when I was a young kid, I'd look at a cowboy star, and he was automatically my hero. Well, that was the same thing putting the officers in the school, and they became their friends. A lot of times you'll hear maybe parents say, "Don't you do anything wrong now. There's a police officer over there, and he's going to get you." Well, that's the worst thing that you can do, because the police officer is always their friend, and that's one thing that Terry always taught.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is, I hated that when a parent would say that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the exact opposite of what we were trying to, you know, our goals were. So I always hated that.
Well, the same thing would happen, Truman, if you were out somewhere and the parent had a child and saw you in the grocery store, as it did with me as the principal sometimes, and the parent telling the child, "You better be good," or the Sheriff Jones or Mr. Campbell or this, that, or the other are going to get you, and I just let them have you, and that was not what we wanted. But the School Resource Officer Program was tremendous,
and
I commend everybody for it.
And thanks to all the great school resource officers we had, and of course, I do not want to go without mentioning Buddy Royston's name, because he was the one that I actually worked with to get it started, and he put a lot of research work, had a lot of hours, a lot of mileage, and brought it to the point where we knew it was going to be successful before we ever got into the schools.
Buddy was very instrumental in the early days.
Yes, he was.
But I just wanted to say thank you. It's a wonderful program.
Thank you, Butch. Appreciate that. And, you know, that pretty much rang true across the board, all the way across the schools. They were also... everything never ran just completely smooth,
right?
But we knew that it was in an area that all of us knew that it was something that was a very positive situation for the schools, and we knew that it was going to work.
Absolutely, and nothing's perfect.
No,
you know, this is real life, so nothing is perfect. But it's an incredible program, and it's something that's always. It's interesting now that when I talk about it and people ask me, well, what did you used to do before you came here? And I tell them about it, and they were like, you know, and a lot of people have that reaction of, are schools that bad in Rutherford County that they need a school resource officer in there? Well, that's not what we do.
No.
And then all you have to do is explain to the individual what exactly the SRO's goal is and what we're in that, or what I was in that position to do, and then they understand it and they think it's the greatest thing that they've ever heard of. So, and would say, well, I wish they were in my kid's school, or I wish they were in, you know, we had those when I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always, almost always, it's a positive reaction.
People have an image of patrol officers walking the hallways making sure nothing's going on wrong, and that's their entire existence there. And they don't really understand the complexity of a school resource officer.
Absolutely, and I think one of the key, a great decision that you made was to put us in those polos, or put them in the polos. I keep saying us.
Yeah.
Put us in polos.
You'll always be there in my memory.
But we were more approachable to those children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times the kids come from backgrounds where they see a cop and the first thing is, well, you took my daddy away last night.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you arrested my mama or my auntie or whatever. And so there's that negative connotation in a lot of families. Mm-hmm. But wearing that polo and those khaki pants made us more approachable. You know, and they saw us, and every day that they saw us, they got more comfortable with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would come that trust, and then within that trust, they would divulge, you know, issues that they were having that we could help them with. So that was a great knockdown to that barrier.
You completely turned them around, and they were confiding in you things that were going on in their own families.
Mm-hmm.
And before that would have been the last thing that they would have ever discussed.
No.
And were afraid to discuss it with anyone.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And that's the amazing thing about it is people like you were the right people to actually gain their trust and become their friends. And they understood it. And that's why you will always be the friends of each and every one of the kids that you dealt directly with, which is amazing.
Yeah, they're special.
I remember before we ever started that, we had Officer Castleman, who did the safety programs, mm-hmm. and anti-drug programs, and that started back in 1978. That's back when Craig Snell was sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in and did a super job, and I never would forget, everywhere you would go with Officer Castleman, a kid would come up and want to talk to him because, I mean, he became so close to them that everybody in Rutherford County just about at one time, because we were going in all the schools, knew Officer Castleman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have gone on to bigger and better things.
I have. Yes. I currently work for a corporation. We are actually contractor with Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So I do Medicare fraud investigation, mm-hmm. basically. And it's for Zone 5, and Zone 5 is Tennessee, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so we handle all the Medicare fraud in that zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with Part B of Medicare fraud.
Right.
And recently have moved up to a different task force, and now I do home health and hospice, which unfortunately there is a lot of fraud. And if you follow in the news, and on the paper and in the news, there's a big push by the government to protect those monies, those Medicare monies. And for many, many years, it's been what we call a pay and chase, where Medicare would pay out to those providers, and then when they discovered they were fraudulent, they'd go and try and recoup those monies.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't always get them back to, you know, take care of the Medicare trust fund or to protect it. And so now we are more aggressive in our investigations and using data analysis,
mm-hmm.
and all those types of things to predict, to have these, I don't know, the data that would fall out to have these providers show up that are fraudulent, and then we stop it before it gets too bad, and we stop their payment.
Mm-hmm.
And another way is that, you know, you can always call the beneficiaries, call 1-800-MEDICARE. And when they call that starts the complaint. From there, if those individuals feel that it might be fraud or a situation that needs more looking into, then they would send it to our office, and then we have a team that looks into those. So Medicare, we're trying to be a lot more aggressive in protecting our trust fund.
That sounds like a really complicated issue. It's almost like, I use an old term I use a lot, is like catching menace with a shark net, because there is so much room there for people to manipulate things like Medicare and some of the others, because I can think of, just while you were saying there, I can think of a number of ways that they could be doing that. And the one that really shocked me, and you and I were talking about this earlier, is that when people have to deal with hospice and things like that, you automatically, I mean, you become just so attached to them.
Yes.
Because I know my mom went through that. It's the only time that we've dealt with it. But they were so wonderful, a tremendous job. And I can't imagine what type of people that would go in and start manipulating something like hospice. It just blows my mind because all the people that we ran into were so dedicated and so wonderful.
Oh, and it's not the majority of them, it's the minority, but still we have a duty to, protect that Medicare trust fund and protect those beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. And, yesterday I was talking with a beneficiary, and she was just the sweetest woman, and it was partly fraud of a home health case. She was her husband's advocate. She was going to fight this, and it was a home health agency, and I'm not jumping on home health agencies. It's just, and it's not even in Tennessee, but every time this home health agency would come in, it's going to end up being a quality of care issue, but would just so poorly treat him, and just the quality of care that every time he would have an episode of a home health, he would end up going back in the hospital with an infection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened 8 times.
Oh, wow.
And, and this, the woman, bless her heart. And she was so thankful. She said nobody would listen to me. I kept calling people, and they wouldn't listen to me. Mm-hmm. And so I had her investigation. And I told her, I said, that's what I'm here for. This is my job to investigate it. And she was just so thankful that somebody would listen to her. And it's sad. Mm-hmm. And you think, why are these providers out there, treating our elderly that way? It's an awful thing, but
they're the number one target.
Absolutely they are,
Because they come from a life that's, they've trusted people most of their lives, and as you get older, you start to rely on other people more because sometimes your memory is not as good, or you cannot do the things that you've always been able to do. So you have to rely on people like that. It's sad that those are the ones, what you and I used to call the bad guys. Mm-hmm. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for an easy target.
Oh, absolutely. It just happens to not be on the criminal side. It's the other side. But yeah, they're trying to find that weak link.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, Terry.
Okay.
We get started talking, and then time just goes by too fast. But I would like people to know that part of this show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Sheffield, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that you can have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. And the big difference is that if you buy a car from Stan McNabb, and whether it be new or used, you will have oil changes for the life of the vehicle and also tire changes.
Additional products and services will be offered for sale.
Working harder but not getting ahead? The rich get richer no matter which way the economy is headed, because today's times are filled with opportunity if you understand the new rules of money. You need to attend a free Rich Dad Education Workshop at the Embassy Suites in Murfreesboro and the Factory at Franklin. Based on the teachings from the best-selling book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, this totally free 90-minute event will show you how to survive and build security during these hard economic times. We teach why your house is not an asset, why you may not want to diversify, why you may not want to invest in 401ks or mutual funds, why saving money will never make you rich. These are just some of Rich Dad's teachings that will change the way you think about money. Attend this free Rich Dad education training next Wednesday and Thursday. Sign up now at richdadradio.com. That's richdadradio.com, or call 800-841-1993. That's 800-841-1993. Register now and get a free gift just for attending. Call 800-841-1993 today.
Hello, good neighbor listeners. This is David Hoover with Rutherford County Farm Bureau. We'd like to show our appreciation to all of our Farm Bureau members by inviting you to our annual meeting Monday, September the 12th at the Lane Agri Park Center, 315 John Rice Boulevard. We'll be serving the barbecue from 5 to 6:15 with the meeting at 6:30. We appreciate our Farm Bureau members and look forward to seeing you there. If you need more information, give us a call at 893-1213 or visit our website at rcfarmbureau.org.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Cole Porter's Anything Goes tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. There's also a Sunday matinee at 2. And over in Smyrna at the Lamplighters Theater, it's Annie tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and a 4:30 Sunday afternoon matinee. Now, the Better Business Bureau's tailgate party is 4 o'clock tomorrow next to the Murphy Center tennis courts. You'll hear the tailgating fun in our pregame show here on WGNS, as well as the live play-by-play coverage of the Blue Raiders hosting Georgia Tech. That's tomorrow. Also tomorrow night, the 9th Annual Smyrna Rotary Club's Wings of Freedom Fish Fry. This is in the corporate flight hangar at the Smyrna Airport. Starts at 5 o'clock tomorrow night. Our hats off to the Smyrna Rotary Club for all that they do. And from 5 until 8 tomorrow night, the Art for Alzheimer's Silent Auction at Broadmoor Senior Living. 5 until 8 tomorrow night. That's at 3211 Memorial Boulevard. The tribute to 9/11 Sunday from 1 to 5 at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. They'll be dedicating that 9/11 memorial sculpture featuring a steel I-beam. That's this Sunday. And there's a Christiana School reunion here in Murfreesboro at the Carriage Lane Reception House on Burton Street, Sunday from 2 until 4. All classes are encouraged to attend. And homecoming Sunday at 2 at the Key United Methodist Church. That's at 806 State Street, Sunday at 2. And Sunday evening at 5, Steve Warren will be at the Lighthouse Pentecostal Church at 1108 West College Street, right behind Chef Wang's, Sunday night at 5. Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Tonight it seems partly cloudy this afternoon, high in the upper 70s. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, low near 58. Saturday, slight chance of showers and storms. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 79.
It's Friday. Hi, this is Tom at Kirk & Burt's. Stop by and pick up a rack of ribs for just $15. Kirk & Burt's, 517 Cason Lane, just down from the theater. Call us at 893-FOOD, and we also deliver in the Cason Lane area.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
With today's guest, Terry Bateman.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll give you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips now, how about you? Readable for me.
You're listening to John Blankenship and friends, Avon Lane, Sarah and Ken Prezel, and Billy Yearwood. They're the band. That's the great music that you hear when you go out there. Country music and Western. I mean, just absolutely as good as you'll hear anywhere. And the food is out of this world. And what you do is you go to Readable, which is about a 10-minute drive down John Bragg Highway from Murfreesboro. And you'll turn left when you see the sign that says Readable Meals. And you can drive about 2 miles. And you'll go into another world. The Readable Mill will be 200 years old next year. And Tom Brady refurbished it. It's an absolutely gorgeous place. You got the river running around it. It's one of those places where you can just go back in time from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Saturday. And I was talking to Terry a minute ago, and she's going to be utilizing the mill for something else.
We are. My oldest daughter is getting married at Readable Mill.
And that doesn't seem possible.
Well, it hasn't hit me yet, but I'm sure it will on that day. But absolutely fabulous venue for a wedding. If there's any brides out there, you really need to check Readable Mill out. The grounds are beautiful. Mm-hmm. We're having the reception there. Nora, the woman, she is a hoot. She's lovely.
She is.
Don't you just love her?
I just
love that woman. She's got everything. All her ducks are always in a row, and she's going to make sure your ducks are in a row too. But perfect venue for, and reasonable for venues. Mm-hmm. Wedding venues are outrageous. Readable Mill, very affordable.
You know, she was on the show.
Was she really?
Yeah, two or three months ago. And she is so much fun.
Isn't she?
Go out there quite a bit on Saturday mornings.
Oh,
and just
I hear
really,
it's fabulous food.
Oh, you need to go out there and eat and just have fun. You'll know half the people out there at least.
Yeah. Oh, it's a fabulous place.
And if you'd like to make reservations, you can call 563-6455 or on the internet, www.readablemeal.com. Let's see, where were we?
Oh, we were talking about Medicare fraud, I think.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And there's so many different areas. Are most of your, the beginning of most of your investigations, is that brought about by word of mouth, people calling, making complaints? And are there any specific things that you're looking for once they make that call?
Most of our complaints come in from a couple of different avenues. One is the beneficiaries call in. Mm-hmm. They get their summary notice, mm-hmm. and they see that something just doesn't look right. Well, I didn't see this doctor. I didn't see that doctor. And sometimes it's as easy as looking in their claims history and finding out that, well, when you were at the emergency room, you may have seen this doctor, but this other doctor's showing up. Well, it's probably because they had x-rays, and so that radiologist mm-hmm. read those x-rays, so he's going to, you know, charge what he has to charge. So mm-hmm. that's something that could be that simple. But
it is a complicated thing when you start reading the bill of all the things that have been done
yes,
for you. And,
absolutely.
And it's not unusual to find a few in there that were not there.
Absolutely. And we encourage, you know, beneficiaries to make sure that you look over your summary notice. And whenever you have any questions, you absolutely need to call. Another avenue that we get our complaints are former or current employees, mm-hmm. when they know that just things are not right, and mm-hmm. they see, and some of them have complained or voiced concerns and have been terminated, or you know, a little hostile work environment, or just plain, you know, left because those providers just say, well, I know about it, but we're just going to keep on doing it this way. And another proactive way we do it is we have proactive data analysis. We have a whole data team mm-hmm. that will write, and I stumble on this part because I'm learning this data analysis world, and we have a data team that's great, and they write parameters for their proactive analysis that they do, and then certain providers will fall out if they have high billing or spike billing, or, you know, out of a certain area, are they are their payments a whole lot higher than their peers? So that's another avenue that we get, that we go after providers.
You're almost like the Better Business Bureau of the medical
yeah.
service industry, but with punishment to follow.
Yes. And we work with OIG, the Office of Attorney General, and a lot of times they take on those investigations and do their own investigation and prosecute. But, you know, that's another side to it.
Now, you actually work up the case.
Yes, we do work up the case.
Now, how much are you involved in the actual prosecution of the company or individual or whatever?
Well, if there's a criminal prosecution, then that's handled by the OIG. But if we have monies that, if we have it right an overpayment and recoup those funds, that's done by the carrier, like Palmetto or mm-hmm. CGS, which used to be Cigna. You know, they are the ones who go to the provider and say, you owe us this amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes they, but you know, there's also all those levels of appeals that they can go through.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we write for a $1.4 million overpayment, we may only see $500,000, if that, you know. So it's kind of, it's like, you know, a DUI case, and you really want to win that DUI case, and you go to court, and then mm-hmm. they plead out, and so it can get frustrating, but, you know, we forge on.
What if you say maybe a hospital or something like that seems to get continuous complaints from that particular organization, and you go in and start investigating them, and you start finding maybe that there are some cases that go beyond the accidental part,
mm-hmm.
what do you do then?
Well, when we see that, we always call the OIG and see if they want to be involved. And in many cases, they do want mm-hmm. But if there's a quality of care issue, then that goes to another organization who handles mm-hmm. that quality of care, and then they can pull their, you know, license, they can pull their certification. So there's many different avenues that happen in one investigation. A lot of different hands are in that, are in a pot when we're working on those investigations.
And if an individual, say his wife dies or somebody like that, and they're both both Social Security and Medicare, and the person does not report that death like they should,
mm-hmm.
where does that fall in as far as what organization? That probably would not go to yours.
It wouldn't go to us, no. That's a good question, because I'm really not sure about that one.
I think that's one is probably is one of the easiest to get away with if people really don't do a whole lot of follow up. But
they usually are supposed to call the carrier that provides that Medicare mm-hmm. payment to is usually who's supposed to put it in the system. But I don't know.
If someone is listening out there that thinks that they may have some fraudulent things going on with their Medicare providers or whatever, what should they do? What should be the first step, and then where do they go from that? Because I know it's one of those things that's got to be extremely complicated.
It is, but the best thing for them to do is call 1-800-MEDICARE, report that, and they will pass it on to the appropriate organization, whether it be us or wherever they deem fit, whatever zone they are in. That would be your first step, and they're going to get back with you and let you and follow up with you. It's not like they're going to report it and then they never hear anything again. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that we always make sure we do, is when we start an investigation, we write a letter and say, we have this investigation, we want you to know that we are looking into it. And then when we come to our conclusion at the end of that investigation, we send them another letter and say, this is what ended at the end of this investigation, this is what the outcome is. So there's a beginning and an end to it. And sometimes that's what, you know, you want. You want to know, well, what's been done about it. So the system is, you know, I mean, of course any system has flaws, but mm-hmm. It's run. It's a pretty good oiled machine.
When you call Medicare, that number, do you get to talk to a real person?
You do.
Which is amazing. Now, you may have to wait a while, because I have done it. I had to take care of my mom and some of my mom and dad stuff. But sometimes it seemed like it's going to.
Yeah.
And of course, you're frustrated when those things.
Oh,
you're
yes.
already emotionally spent and all those other things. But, you know, when you think of Medicare and all those big, huge governmental things that they deal with, you think of a black hole. You say, where in the world am I ever going to get mm-hmm. an answer on that?
Yeah.
But what you're doing is you're providing the answers. You're providing a place for them to go
mm-hmm.
and to take care of their problems. And that's such a wonderful service. And
yeah.
I know that you have to feel a lot of accomplishment.
Oh. Yeah, we all do. I work with a lot of great people and very, very smart people, and they do very, you know, they're diligent with their investigations. So it is. It's always nice when you're helping somebody and you know you're helping somebody.
Are you like maybe when you used to be when we were at the other department? Sometimes do you feel like that you've got so much work and so many things to do that you're going to leave some of it out because there's just too much to cover with very few resources?
It gets frustrating, but I will say this, that the one thing that I can say coming from working at the Sheriff's Department is I see the things that the people I work with now, sometimes they get stressed over. It doesn't stress me. I mean, I guess because in law enforcement you deal with a different type of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so this type of stress, you know, meeting deadlines and all that. Of course, I meet my deadlines, but, you know, some things that people get worked up about is just not worth getting worked up about, you know. But we have good systems. Sometimes, you know how computers are hinky, and sometimes they don't work all the time. But, you know, I wouldn't say we're overloaded with investigations. I think each person has what they can handle. Of course, you know, you're always hoping that they hire some more to kind of even the playing field out. But It's a good environment to work in. It is.
You hear some of the people that are running for public office, whether it be at the presidential level or senatorial or whatever on federal, you see them attacking Social Security and Medicare quite often. Do you feel like that's a valid point at all?
Well, I've almost come to the conclusion that when I get of age, there won't be
hopefully there will be. You know, and that's one thing that I've always maintained is that is something that once you get to that age, you've actually earned it.
You've earned
you
it, right.
Paid that money
absolutely.
In. Absolutely. And you continue to pay that money in. If you're drawing Social Security, you're going to pay taxes just like everybody else. And I get so tired of a lot of the politicians attacking something that makes it sound like that you're just standing there with your hands open and you're wanting a free gift.
Yeah.
And it's not a free gift.
No, it's not a free gift. You put your hard work, hard-earned money in that. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be nice to have something when you get of age to, you know, to be able to breathe and not, you know, work constantly, you know. So that would be nice. But, you know, it's the hot issue right now.
It is.
Yeah.
But I know just with your program, it sounds like to me that Medicare is trying to take care of all the loose ends and all the fraudulent things that are going on. But it's just such a big complex of so many things going on that it's hard to keep up with everything that's going on.
It is, and the way that when Medicare first started, it was on the trust system, and so Medicare, they just paid and would pay. And wait a minute, people aren't telling the truth. And so now we've evolved, Medicare has evolved to where we try and stop the bleeding, to where before, as I mentioned earlier, it's the pay and chase. And you don't always recoup that money. And, you know, our job is to protect the Medicare Trust Fund. And so now we're charged with stopping the bleeding. So we stop all the fraud. We try and stop as much of the fraudulent behavior as we can before it gets out the door.
Knowing you and how tender-hearted you are, do you get to see a number of the people whose trust have been violated, the older people?
We don't ever get to see them. I mean, we talk to them on the phone,
yeah.
You know. And
well, for you, that's probably good.
Yeah. We, you know, during that, the lifespan of that investigation, you have a lot of contact with your beneficiary, and so you kind of get to know this. Like the lady I was talking about, I've talked to her the last 2 days, and you know, she's like my grandmother. I mean, she's just so sweet, and you can tell that she is her husband's advocate, and there's, you know, she wants to make it right, and you know, he's very ill, and she just wants somebody to listen to her. And so you have that opportunity in that lifespan of that investigation to build a rapport with your beneficiary. So It's you're right. It's probably not. It's probably good I don't see them face to face, because
it is. Now, when companies actually, how do they get on? Kind of, I don't know really what the word is, but like a register to be able to bill Medicare. Is there a certain procedure, and are there any guidelines to protect Medicare from any type of fraud once that person does that?
Well, they have to fill out, you know, a ton of paperwork to be able to bill Medicare. And once all their paperwork is approved, then they can start billing Medicare. But once they are identified, you know, as fraudulent, we write an overpayment. In some cases, CMS, Medicare, will let us write a suspension on there. And so we can suspend their license for a period of 180 days. So there again, Medicare is very trusting. And so that's how it was written. So sometimes they err on the side of the provider, you know, but things are, the tide is changing. And so they are seeing and they're acknowledging more. And I guess that's why our job is where it is in stopping that bleeding. So
Medicare is actually toughening up.
Yes.
On all those people who are manipulating the system.
It's a slow progress, but yes.
Okay, and while you and I, we've seen so many people that were great manipulators, And one of the things that I always think, all right, if you've got a company and their name is whatever,
Suzanne.
And somewhere along the line, they're able to manipulate the title and all the other things that go with it. If you catch somebody like that, what do you do? Do you just absolutely throw the book at them? Because it's obvious what they're trying to do.
Yes, we do. And there again, it's a lot in CMS's, you know, ballpark, what they'll let us do.
We have a caller on the line, Terry. Caller, welcome aboard with Terry Bateman.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask the question, why is it so hard to catch these people? I mean, we're in a computer age now. I guess they get hit in the electronic gizmo stuff. But I was just wondering if you could tell us about how many people y'all have called, how many you've prosecuted, and how much money you've returned to the state. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. I wish I had a total for you, but I don't. It's millions. I can say that in total since the company has been in works.
And that's just your company?
Yes. It is frustrating, and... You know, as we were talking before, Truman, we were, you know, how Medicare, we are an age in computers.
Right.
And that is our primary tool that we use in our office. And then doing beneficiary interviews. But there again, the tide is turning. Medicare, how it's set up, was very trusting and erred on the side of the provider and has for many, many, many years.
Right.
And so it's a slow process. And it's a frustrating process. I mean, my mom's on Medicare, too, you know, and I'm very watchful for her. And so I understand that frustration. But it's a slow process, but we're being more diligent.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you.
Self-storage has never been so convenient. Thanks to Zippy Shell, providing self-storage and moving solutions right to your front door. We deliver, you pack it, we pick it up and store it. Our units are secure, convenient, and best of all, they're just as affordable as traditional ones. Zippy Shell. Call us today for a free estimate.
Call locally owned Zippy Shell today. 216-7879. That's 216-7879.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
We're back with Terry Bateman, and I'm so glad that she's found another place that she can go in and actually be a service to people, especially the certain type people who are so vulnerable. And we were talking off the air, and you know, it's not like Medicare just throws the money away, because any of us that have been through the situation knows that say, after you've lost a loved one, it takes a long time to complete all of the payments that have been done. And you have to continually follow up with it, which I didn't really mind doing it, because, you know, it's something that you were doing for your parents.
Right.
But like you were saying, Some of your investigations take years.
Take years. And once we determine the fact that we need to review medical records, and we send the medical records request, and then they have 30 days to get those medical records to us. And once they come to us, then the CMS has given our nurses, you know, a year to review those records. And I'm not saying, I mean, they're dealing with a lot of investigators that have a lot of records. So that year, it sounds like a horrible amount of time, but it's realistic for them because they have so many records they have to look over. And then once they identify those claims that have been denied, then we can write the overpayment for whatever the amount may be. And then there's the appeals process of that. And, you know, so it's nothing happens quickly in the land of Medicare. So it's not the investigations, not on the beneficiary side. It's just a slow process.
And it's just not government being slow. It's government, and we're talking about Medicare, Social Security, any of those. They're in charge of a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And they have to make sure that they watch every dime and nickel. Mm-hmm. And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm glad that they do
oh,
that.
I do too. Absolutely.
Now, is there a time limit on the amount of time that you can go back and actually recover monies or maybe help replace some of the things that the individuals were looking for? Am I asking you a bad question?
Well, I don't have, I should know this answer, but I don't have the answer right at this moment. I'm going to say
that's
three years.
It's a very difficult one. Of course, as you know, when we were in the other business, there were time limits on different things all the way down the line.
Right.
Even if you can't go in and recover the amount of money, if there is a stipulated time, you still can do a lot of damage to the people that defrauding the individuals or the companies or whatever.
Yeah, we've had providers call in and, you know, you pretty much, you know, taking, I can't meet my payroll. I can't, you know, well, sorry, we didn't do the fraudulent behavior. Yeah, it was you. So, you know, sob stories for those providers that call in.
Well, I am so glad that the people, as they have gotten older, have got a person that's looking out for their best interest, Terry. You always did here, and I know that you always will be, and how fortunate your company is to have you, and glad to see you again.
Well, it's a pleasure, and it was so good to see you. I just thank the world of you. I love you so much.
Me too.